This afternoon's meeting of the Transportation Finance Committee to order here on Wednesday, April 18th. I'd like y'all to know my hometown school is closed again today because of snow. Not making me happy. But today we are taking testimony. We have a long list of over 20 testifiers. We're going to try to limit testimony to 3 minutes. We might give the commissioners a little leeway on that, but not too much. So we do have the opportunity of coming back tonight. So if we can't get our work done, we will have to come back tonight. So I would guess that most of us would like to get done today. And so testifiers, if you want to stay on friendly terms with legislators, I suggest you be concise. With that, we do have minutes from our meeting on April 17th. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do move these minutes. And I was just sharing with Mr. Lee and Mr. Burris how aptly you captured their fine testimony. So I do move the minutes from April 17th.
Thank you. Any discussion on the minutes? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. Minutes are approved. Thank you. We will move right into testimony, and our first testifier this afternoon is Ray Colas from LKQ Cooperation. Next up will be Steve Novak. So welcome to committee, Mr. Colas. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Absolutely. My name is Ray Colison. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for LKQ Corporation. We're the world's largest distributor of automotive aftermarket and recycled car parts. Here in the state of Minnesota, we have about 360 employees that work out of 11 different operations with a payroll dollar of roughly $15 million. Now, I'm here to speak in support of Section 22, which deals with salvage titles. Current law exempts vehicles that are 6 years or older or vehicles worth less than $9,000 from the salvage title requirements in the state. What this section would do is align Minnesota's law with 35 other states in the U.S. by eliminating a loophole which would allow these vehicles to be sold with a clean title. Now, clean title is equivalent to a vehicle's title that has never been involved in an accident where that vehicle was declared a total loss. Unfortunately, here in the state of Minnesota, it allows these vehicles to be sold. Misleading consumers into believing that some of these vehicles have never been involved in an accident resulting in a total loss. Current law serves no purpose, no benefit to your constituents as well as consumers. This proposal simply requires fair disclosure as to the status of the title on the vehicle. And it doesn't discriminate as to which types of vehicles should be declared salvage or not. We believe that everyone should be afforded the same protections regardless of the model year of their vehicle or the value of those vehicles. No person is in the market to purchase a used vehicle without knowing that vehicle's true history. I don't think you could find a single person who would not want to know the history, the true value and history of that vehicle that they're purchasing. As they state, the purchase of a vehicle is the second most important purchase in that individual's life. So they would like to make the most informed decision that they can. Now, current law, unfortunately, legally allows these, repairs and dealers to sell these vehicles with a clean title, although it may be unethical when they know the true history of that vehicle. And that's why we're here to correct that. Now, although this practice is unethical, it's not illegal. And we think that it should be, just as it is in 35 other states. Therefore, we're asking that you support full disclosure of these vehicles that provide true history of the vehicle's title, and we're asking that you vote yes.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Colas. Next, we have Steve Novak, followed by Bradley Peterson.
Good
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Steve Novak, I handle transportation issues for the Minnesota Intercounty Association, which is basically four of the five suburban counties and 10 of the largest greater Minnesota counties. We want to say thank you for the appropriation that's in the bill for the County Road and Bridge System, $25 million. As I say that, I want to remind you that that system is about 2 to 3 times larger than the state highway system, so if you want to continue to give it more time and attention, we'd appreciate that. Also, your continued progress on the trunk highway bond authorization and your attention to corridors of commerce, the rail grade safety issues are also appreciated by our members. We hope you keep working on it and remember what we all learned over the last 2 to 3 years, which is the size and the scope of the overall problem, $6 billion over 10 years. So we appreciate the progress, and I look forward to continuing to work with you and wish you the best as we move towards the end of the session. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Novak. Mr. Peterson, followed by Patrick Baker. Mr. Peterson, please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Bradley Peterson with the firm of Flaherty & Hood, here today on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, representing 96 cities outside of the 7-county metro area. Mr. Chair, I simply just wanted to appreciate what you've done for two of our high transportation priorities in this bill, city streets, especially those who are participating in the newly created small city assistance program. The ongoing money there has been a priority of ours, and we appreciate the attention to that program. And we also appreciate the infusion of additional funds into the corridors of commerce program. This, again, is one of our highest priorities from a transportation perspective. And so on both counts, Mr. Chair, we think the bill does very well.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Next up, Patrick Baker. Mr. Peterson set a fine example by coming to the table early and being ready to give his testimony immediately. So if you happen to be next on the list and are comfortable sitting next to the person who's at the table, feel free to step forward. After Baker is Commissioner Zelli.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon to members of the committee. My name is Patrick Baker. I serve as the Director of Government and Institutional Affairs for Greater Mankato Growth. That's our Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Organization serving Greater Mankato. I also have the pleasure of serving on the U.S. Highway 14 Partnership Board of Directors, and it is in that capacity that I appear before you today. I want to thank Chairman Torkelson for the significant investments in transportation contained in this bill, particularly the proposed $155 million for Corridors of Commerce. As you know, the Highway 14 Partnership is a strong supporter of Corridors of Commerce program and has been since its inception. We are grateful that this program has been used to strengthen key transportation corridors across the state, particularly Highway 14. You may be surprised to know that Mankato is the fastest growing metro area in Greater Minnesota. Yet our ability to grow faster and become an even bigger contributor to the state's economy and tax base is constrained by the lack of four-lane connection to New Ulm and Rochester, important regional centers to our east and west. The legislature knows well the stories of inadequate transportation connections that inhibit economic growth and investment are repeated all over the state. In a time of budget surplus, investing in corridors of commerce to connect critical regional centers with safe and efficient transportation infrastructure is one of the smartest investments the legislature can make and will pay dividends in the future. We also appreciate that the House bill provides some cash funding for the Corridors of Commerce program, which is necessary for the land acquisition and engineering that must occur to make projects shovel-ready. The Highway 14 Partnership commends the inclusion of significant Corridors of Commerce funding in this bill and requests the committee's support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Baker. Next we have Commissioner Zelli, followed by Steve Huser. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Commissioner Charlie Zelli from the Department of Transportation. And for the record, I'm very comfortable sitting next to Mr. Baker. I just didn't want to be disruptive. I very appreciate being before the committee and to acknowledge the additional funding for the trunk highway construction, both in this bill and certainly the last legislature. It really is necessary, and I would, of course, it goes with what my constant refrain is that it is not enough for the kind of investments we need in infrastructure. There's certainly been a lot of conversation about an amendment to dedicate that funding. I just take this opportunity to say that I appreciate the signaling of having dedicated funds for transportation. That's something I've been really think is necessary. I am concerned about three things if that were to be passed. One is that the additional funding excludes transit, which I think is a very important use throughout the state. It takes away the flexibility for future legislators to deal with the times of deficit because it is taken from the general fund. And frankly, it actually by itself is inadequate. It really covers less than half of what's really required over the long term. So if something so bold were to pass, I think we would lose the opportunity to raise additional new revenue, which is really required in future years. But I wanted to comment specifically on the bill proposed. I think there's a number of policy provisions which I appreciate and we love that it are included, like the funding for facilities program, changes in airport zoning. We've worked for many years on those changes, and I think we're at a point to pass them. There's a couple of funding proposals that are not in the program to which we're disappointed. We keep describing the need for replacement of our two state airplanes. They are 35 and 23 years old. It requires a lot of costs on maintenance, and they're down frequently. Also, the funding for our tribal training program, which we currently are managing in the Department of Transportation, it would be good to have general fund resources to keep that program going. Another thing I've discussed before is the earmarks. There's two studies which I specifically earmarked, one on I-94, where I'll have to say we know so much about the specific traffic volumes, pavement conditions, safety issues, bridge condition. We actually don't need another $500,000 study. And also an interchange in I-35 in Rice County. This is primarily for the benefit of a local highway. We just don't feel it's appropriate for trunk highway use and an earmarked one at that. We have a lot of studies. They cost millions of dollars. We want to make sure to be prudent that we're spending money effectively and learning valuable information.
Sorry, Commissioner, my timer went off. I have no idea how to stop it. Can you, do you know how to run one of these things?
I have friends at Minute. I couldn't know.
Good one. Commissioner, we'll allow you a little more than 3 minutes.
I'll try to conclude quickly. I think there's issues about where we would be required to add lanes on I-94. They are certainly worthy to expand an area between Clearwater and Monticello, there's many areas which have higher rates of traffic and congestion throughout our system and even on I-94, so it's just not an efficient use to actually make us use that. I think our engineers, if they come to that conclusion, they will come to that conclusion because there'll be value in the process. Just briefly on the Corridors of Commerce bonding, we have obviously been very supportive of the Corridors of Commerce program, but to take some of our valuable bonding capacity at this point, I think without additional revenue would not be prudent because we have so many other needs, large needs for future preservation. There's a number of unfunded projects which we see looming on the horizon, like replacement of I-94 between St. Paul and Minneapolis, that's at least $600 million. The Twin Ports Program up in Duluth, that's $193 million. Replacing the Botnick Bridge, that's $300 million. It goes on, and many of them are spread around the entire state just to replace the existing condition. It's not Corridors of Commerce eligible. I have two other quick items. We have some safety concerns about the requirement for motorists to yield to on-track vehicles at crossings. That would be like a pickup truck on the rails. I don't think it's very safe. Our folks are very concerned that if a vehicle on the tracks does not trigger the safety equipment, the flashing lights and the gates, we are inviting a real collision. So that's just a quick point. I know my time is limited, and I will write any additional comments, but I appreciate the opportunity to appear before you today. Okay.
Thank you for being with us, Commissioner. I'm sorry about the interruption.
No, I'm used to that. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Steve Huser, followed by Craig Schlichting.
Thank you,
please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Steve Huser. I represent Metro Cities. Metro Cities represents the shared interests of cities in the seven-county metro area. Metro Cities supports the increased funding for municipal state aid streets and the Small Cities Assistance Program included in Article 1, Section 2, and the Corridors of Commerce appropriation included in the bill, as well as the funding for deputy registrar reimbursements in Article 1, Section 4. Metro Cities would like to work with the author to ensure that language in Article 3, Section 39 does not change current statute weight restrictions for garbage and recycling trucks in cities that have adopted curbside recycling pickup. I have spoken with committee staff, and I think we're there. Metro Cities just wants to make sure. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. After Mr. Schlichting is Wayne Hall. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. I'm Craig Schlichting with the City of New Brighton. I'm here on behalf of a railroad bridge that crosses Rice Creek. The primary function of the bridge is to provide rail service. It has a secondary function of flood protection and recreation. A bridge failure in this location would threaten public safety and also could lead to flooding. It is with this, on behalf of New Brighton, Rice Creek Watershed District, and Ramsey County Parks, that I offer our support for the language as included. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next will be Wayne Hall, followed by Bob Carney.
Hey, my name is Wayne Hall. I'm Chief Operating Officer of the Minnesota Commercial Railroad. Again, with what Craig said, I am here for the Rice Creek Bridge, the railroad bridge. I appreciate your support in getting the bridge included. This bridge will support over 1,500 jobs in the state of Minnesota, keep four existing businesses in production, and nine supplemental companies that will also be supported. Appreciate your support on this bill.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Hall. Bob Carney is next, followed by Leslie Davis. I don't see Bob Carney. Then it's Leslie Davis. And following Leslie is Luther Winder. We have a handout. The page will take care of that. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony, Mr. Davis.
Good afternoon. I'm Leslie Davis. I was going to come in here shouting, the monsters are coming, the monsters are coming. But I don't have to because they're already here. You see what's happening. You know yourself. Fluoridating our water, mobilizing state military, bombing sovereign nations, dumping on our own UN ambassador, Comey, the Russians, the hookers, Cohn the lawyer, all of it. You see it as well as I do. We're in trouble. You better realize it for the sake of your families in the state of Minnesota. Who else do we have to count on but you? The pile of debt growing by trillions. Think hard about that and what it means. Trillions of dollars of debt. That's not serious. It's insane. By any measure, the definition of the word insanity, trillions of dollars of debt is as insane as it gets. Do you want to add to the trillions by what's being proposed? Or do you want to be patriots charting a new path? Of course you do. And I brought you the map on the path to patriotism. Again, I've been here before, but I hope now you're ready to listen and pay attention and act properly. You think the tax deal is a big thing for Minnesota? Peanuts, $600 million. The money plan I'm suggesting is billions. Billions now, billions next year, billions forever for the state of Minnesota by implementing the money plan. It means thousands of great jobs, great state-of-the-art roads and bridges, with geothermal and solar and collecting the water runoff so it doesn't run into our wetlands to protect them. No new taxes, loans, no fuel tax, no axle tax, and a wealth money system going into place that'll be the envy and the marker for everybody around the country. Every other state will start to copy what we're doing in Minnesota, and they'll begin to pay the debt out of the system. You can't pay debt with debt and get out of debt. But right now, here in this room, the likes of those who rode with Paul Revere must ride again. Not now, or maybe, or could be, or should be, or might be, but right now. Who else will do it? I know you're afraid, but fear's like a fist. It's not a good item. You can't pick your nose, you can't comb your hair with it. So open your fist and let go of your fear and support the money plan. It's simple. It's in your purview to and power to implement it. Support it, vote for it, and if anyone opposes it, let's hear who they are and what they have to say and what they oppose about it. Nobody opposes it. So now it's up to you to be a puppet or a patriot, and I hope you'll be patriots. Thanks very much. Have a good day.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. Next we have Luther Weiner, followed by Margaret Donahoe.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair of Committee. I'm Luther Winder, SEC Director for Minnesota Valley Transit Authority and also a member of STA. Here to show support and say thank you for the appropriation that's in the transportation bill to the demonstration project of $3.5 million. I want to thank you on behalf of the hopefully the constituents and the consumers who will utilize that route to continue to get to their to employment. This is not for expansion, but for replacement. As we've talked about before, those buses are over 14 years old, and they have a 38% higher breakdown ratio as well as operating costs of the existing fleet. So this funding will allow us to maintain that service as well as hopefully to continue to grow that service so we continue to see people get to their employment. So I want to thank you for your support, and I think the private investment from Amazon, Mississippi Lake Casino, Canterbury, as well as all the other employers who are now receiving and are very happy about those employees and now have access to, thank you as well.
Thank you, Mr. Winder. Next we have Margaret Donahoe, followed by Commissioner Dolan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Margaret Donahoe. I'm the director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. First of all, we'd like to thank Representative Torkelson for increasing funding for transportation in this bill. Making transportation investments a priority for surplus dollars is the only way the state can continue to reduce the serious funding gap that we face. We appreciate the $76 million increase in funding for the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund that does provide additional funding for state highways, for county state aid highways, and municipal state aid streets. The additional funding for the Small Cities Assistance Fund and for townships will also assist as local governments continue to really struggle just to maintain the roads and bridges that they have jurisdiction over. Just as funding for the local road and bridge programs in the capital bonding bill, which we would urge total $1 billion, is critical to leverage additional funding, these additional funds, while they will not solve all the problems that we face on our road and bridge system, will help leverage other funds and allow for the repair of more roads and bridges across the state. The new freight program for economic development, like the former TED program, is a new way to prioritize investments, and that will also assist local governments and railroads to enhance safety and also to support economic development. We do have concerns about language in the bill that prohibits the use of state dollars for light rail transit and language limiting the use of state dollars in the North Star corridor. We believe it's important to maintain the strong federal, state, and local partnership that funds most of our transportation system. We do support the funding in the bill for the suburb-to-suburb transit service that you just heard about that's in this bill. We strongly support the additional bond authorization for the Corridors of Commerce program, which has been very successful in allowing for important improvements in key corridors, often projects that have been languishing for many years. And we also support the $75 million in trunk highway bond funds for railroad grade separation on state highways. That's very important for safety. Again, thank you for increasing investments to address the critical needs on our transportation system as we continue to push for ongoing funding to reduce the serious funding shortfall that the state faces for highways, transit, bridges, rail, and all modes of transportation.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Commissioner Doman, followed by Nancy Haas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mona Doman, and I'm the Commissioner of Public Safety. And I'd like to start by saying thank you for your support of the work that we do at the Department of Public Safety. I respect and appreciate the difficult decisions you are faced with in juggling the competing interests presented to you to work to meet your targets in the supplemental budget. Public safety is one of government's core functions, and it is the core mission of the Department of Public Safety. I know that we've had many tough conversations about where we have come from and where we are going regarding driver and vehicle services in Minnesota, and I appreciate the support that you've given the department and the commitment to helping find solutions. The services we provide through the Department of Public Safety are some of government's core functions, and we are a state agency, but we have direct local impact. At DVS especially, our support is to those individual Minnesotans, law enforcement, deputy registrars, businesses and dealers who need assistance with titling, registration, licensing, and everything in between. I'm disappointed that this bill does not include the governor's proposed proposals around MNLARS. The governor's budget proposal is focused on fixing and completing the MNLARS system, providing support to deputy registrars who demonstrated loss due to the MNLARS rollout, and ensuring that Minnesotans, can get the assistance that they need when they try to contact the department, especially during this transition time. Governor Dayton's proposals in his supplemental budget are our priorities, and I hope that you will reconsider and fully fund our proposal. The governor's proposal has three parts. In the first one, he recommends funding to support the continued development and improvement of the MNLARS system. A part of his request is an ongoing stable funding source for the required maintenance and operation of MNLARS and the fast driver license system into the future. The governor's supplemental budget also provides ongoing funding to add 63 new staff necessary to timely respond to calls and emails in the Driver and Vehicle Services Public Information Center, or commonly referred to as the PIC. And the third is the governor's supplemental budget also includes $10 million to reimburse deputy registrars for actual incurred costs related to the implementation of MNLARS. Additionally, as you know, there are a number of bills moving through both bodies that propose changes to the current driver and vehicle services delivery model in Minnesota. Some of the proposals are not related to the MNLARS rollout, but substantially change the way driver and vehicle services are provided in Minnesota. If those changes are to be made, I'd strongly suggest that all who are impacted come together to have thoughtful, thorough, and more comprehensive conversation. We are committed to working with you and all stakeholders to have those very conversations. Although many of the proposals are traveling separate from this bill, we remain concerned about the impact to the roadmap that the stakeholders have developed through their work with Minute and DPS. We remain concerned about the cost of programming and other fiscal impacts to the DVS operating accounts of those changes that are not being accounted for. And we remain concerned that some of the proposals may not be based on best practices or reflect the direction that service delivery is headed nationally. The Department of Public Safety is open to conversations about potential change to the way services are delivered in Minnesota, and we will continue to meet with stakeholder groups to determine how to best approach future business process changes through our new or existing stakeholder engagement structures. All partners in this process should be involved in these decisions, which could result in legislation that has universal support. Thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Chair and members. I and my staff are ready to work with you to finalize these proposals.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you for being with us today. Next, Nancy Haas, followed by Garrick Serpenick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Nancy Haas, and I'm here representing Insurance Auto Auctions. IAA is a leading salvage auction company. Their exclusive focus on the automobile total loss industry and their over 150 corporate-owned facilities across the U.S. and Canada provide sellers and buyers with the best solution to process and acquire total loss vehicles, recovered theft, fleet lease, dealer trade-in, and collision damage vehicles. Section 22 of your bill makes a significant change to Minnesota's motor vehicle title salvage law that will have unintended adverse financial consequences for automobile owners who would be required to have a salvage designation on their vehicle title. As a general rule, when a vehicle is involved in an accident and sustains damage that exceeds 75% of the market value of the vehicle, the consumer's insurance company decides to declare the vehicle a total loss. Insurance companies settle the total loss claims based on their total on the fair market value of the vehicle before the accident and the estimated cost of repairs and the estimated salvage value. Oftentimes, those same vehicles remain roadworthy for or safe for use, and the owner may decide to retain and continue driving the vehicle. If the damages are significant, the owner chooses not to keep the vehicle. The insurance company will settle the insurance claim by paying the owner the fair market value of the vehicle and subsequently have the vehicle transported to an auction facility that specializes in selling damaged vehicles, or either to a repair shop or a parts dismantler. Minnesota law currently requires such total loss vehicles less than 6 years old, or those older vehicles that are considered to be high value, or $9,000 before the damage, to be branded with a salvage title. Other total loss vehicles are not required to have a salvage title. This current 6 year plus high value salvage rule recognizes the practical reality that newer vehicles with a higher fair market value will have significant damage in order to cause a total loss. In contrast, older vehicles are more likely to be declared a total loss even when they're roadworthy, because the repair costs for those minor damages can easily exceed 75% of the low fair market value. Section 22 removal of the late model or high-value vehicles, that change to the law, which eliminates those things, will require every vehicle that is designated a total loss by the insurer now be classified as a salvage title, regardless of whether the damage is structural, cosmetic, or if the vehicle remains roadworthy. Today, the average vehicle on the road is more than 11 years old. The unintended challenge for consumers under this section will be especially apparent with the older model vehicles. When the consumer goes to sell the vehicle, the amount that they receive for their car will be significantly reduced simply because the title has been branded salvage. Likewise, insurance company recoveries for the sale of salvage vehicles will be reduced and could act as an insurance rate cost driver that could result in higher insurance costs for consumers. The majority of states provide the exemption from salvage designation on vehicle titles based on age and or damage threshold. The concerns raised about this section center around out-of-state vehicles and flood vehicles. Minnesota law currently allows for a flood salvage title, and if you were to keep in Section B, that would continue to assist in that effort. However, by including A and C, it drastically expands the policy, and we oppose this expansion. We would support a broader dialogue about perhaps changing the 6 year and $9,000 threshold and bring stakeholders together to iron out those issues at a future time. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up is Gary Cervenek, followed by Emily Murray.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Gary Cervenek, and I represent the Virginia Public Utilities Commission, and I would like to thank you personally and your staff for visiting Virginia and looking at the situation that we had on Highway 53 bridge reconstruction in Virginia. I want to thank you and the committee for taking personal interest in this and including $5.4 million to reimburse the city for borrowing to help in the construction of that facility for utilities. And in addition, I'd like to thank the department and the governor for including it in their supplemental request. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Cervenek. Next, Emily Murray, followed by Jessica Treat. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Emily Murray with the Association of Minnesota Counties, also representing the Minnesota County Engineers Association. We want to just thank you. We appreciate the additional funding that this bill provides to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund and the Corridors of Commerce Program, and just want to thank you for your continued commitment to addressing the needs at the local level. Thanks.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, Jessica Treat, followed by Mark Hughes.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Jessica Treat. I am the Executive Director of Transit for Livable Communities and St. Paul Smart Trips. As the largest transportation advocacy nonprofit in the state, we represent over 10,000 Minnesotans who support expanding options for transit, walking, biking, and sharing. We also lead Transportation Forward, a statewide coalition of over 50 partners, organizations, and thousands of individual supporters calling for new investment in transportation options to improve mobility, economic vitality, and quality of life in Minnesota. As Minnesotans, we pride ourselves on our neighborliness and a sense of connection in our communities. Transportation needs may look a little different in every community, but I know we all share an interest in creating a Minnesota where the air is clean, our families are healthy, and our neighborhoods are thriving. A Minnesota that feels connected because it is. From Main Streets to the Metro, this level of connection is possible, but it requires increased long-term investment in the full spectrum of transportation options Minnesotans want and deserve. Keeping roads and bridges in good repair is only one piece of the puzzle. We are even more connected when we have ample choices for getting to and from the important places in our lives. This bill does not do enough to support transportation options statewide and will take us backward rather than forward. The investments included in this legislation focuses on roads and bridges. There is very little new investment in transit, and what is available is focused only on one area of the state. In the future, we look forward to working with you on a balanced vision of transportation that includes buses, trains, biking, walking, as well as roads and bridges for all Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Treat, for your testimony. I misspoke. Mark Hughes is not with us right now. So next would be Kelly Davison, followed by Ann Finn. Welcome to committee. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kelly Davison, and I am the appointed deputy and the owner of the Prior Lake License Bureau. First of all, I want to thank you all for listening and responding to the severe impact MnLARS has inflicted upon deputy registrars and our citizens. The inability to perform all of the duties that our citizens are accustomed to has put a great hardship onto us all. We appreciate the grant to help with the past financial losses. Unfortunately, we are still forced to use a system that's incomplete, burdened with errors and workarounds that are overly time-consuming. It's imperative that you, the legislators, understand that you are holding the deputy registrar's futures in your hands. Failure to consider a fee restructure going forward will inevitably force the closure of these offices. Many offices cannot survive one full fiscal year waiting for reimbursement. If we don't have a fee restructure or filing fee increase, then we need to have a continuous revenue stream going forward with no gaps in order to sustain. It has not been a full year since the implementation of MnLARS, and I'm one of the offices who's had to pull out retirement money to keep my doors open. It takes a long time to save up retirement money, so it's a little stressful. Once that's exhausted, my house would be next, as I have a responsibility to my 22 employees, the community I serve, and all of our local dealers. I believe the citizens of Minnesota would be outraged if they could not come to their local deputy register offices to receive the products and services we've always provided, especially if it was due to the MnLARS system. People are mad enough. Thank you for all of your support and hard work on the MnLARS topic, and thank you for your very important continued efforts to help keep deputy offices remain viable in their communities. We want to continue serving the citizens of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony today. Next, we have Ann Finn, followed by Ron Elwood.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Ann Finn. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities, and we represent 833 of Minnesota's 853 cities. I want to thank the chair for bringing this bill forward. Specifically, we support provisions in the bill that increase funding for municipal state aid, the small cities assistance account, corridors of commerce, and trunk highway rail grade separations, as well as deputy registrar reimbursements. I did want to raise a concern about one provision in the bill that we're having a little bit of trouble understanding, and that is Article 3, Section 39, that deals in part with recycling and garbage vehicles. We will be working with staff to make sure that our understanding of the bill is consistent with what we understand to be the intent. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony today. Next, we have Ron Elwood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Ron Elwood with Legal Aid, and I'm here to support Section 22 of the bill, the salvage title provision. We don't think there's any rational basis that somebody who has buying a 2014 car should know about prior damage, whereas a person buying a 2010 car would not have any idea that the car had been totaled. We had heard, no one, no matter what their income is, should be sold a car that they don't know was in a major accident. You know, poor people, the people, clients that we represent, have the same rights to know about what condition a car they're buying in as anyone else. I mean, our clients obviously are buying lower-priced vehicles, and if known, the car would probably be sold for less than it's being sold for now because they're not disclosing that has been in a major accident. So therefore, our clients are doubly disadvantaged in these situations. First of all, they're purchasing a car that's potentially unsafe that they don't know about. And secondly, they're purchasing a car that's overpriced. So it's already difficult for our clients to afford a car. They shouldn't be buying an overpriced, unsafe vehicle. And we would urge you to support Section 22. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Elwood. I'm just too efficient. We have a couple testifiers that are not with us at the moment. If there's anyone else who would care to testify to this bill at this time, the testifiers table is open and available. It looks like we have a taker. Welcome to committee, Mr. Hirsch. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Jim Hurst on behalf of the Minnesota Deputy Registrars Association. I wanted to hold off until all the testimony was provided and didn't want to force the committee to meet this afternoon or later this evening if time had expired. But I'll be brief nonetheless. I also want to echo the comments of the individual deputy registrar that arrived and made comments, and certainly I, on behalf of the Deputy Registrar Association, want to thank this committee and you, Mr. Chairman, for listening to our concerns and acting upon them, and certainly the legislation in the omnibus bill certainly identifies the immediate need for relief, and certainly lays the groundwork for providing relief going forward. I think the schedule for that needs to be tweaked somewhat, but we look forward to working with the committee and in the future, and also as a in regards to the department and their comments. I look forward to also working collaboratively with them to address their concerns and to find a meaningful resolution so that deputy registrars can remain viable with the services that they provide to the citizens in the state. And with that, I will conclude my remarks. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your testimony. It's open mic day at the at the Transportation Committee. We have a couple more testifiers we're waiting for, so if anyone else would care to step forward, we would certainly be happy to hear from you. Frank, do you have a story for us today?
Well, no, Mr. Chair, it's interesting you mentioned that. A lot of the great comedians kind of got their start at the Transportation Finance Open. So it's really an opportunity for people, I think.
Yeah, it is. Maybe we should get some better lighting. What's that? There's a semi-professional comedian in the audience, and we're not going to point him out. I have no idea who that might be, Representative Kosnick.
Okay, well, transportation, you know, jokes would be in order.
Well, you missed your chance to be on stage because our next testifier has just arrived. Yeah, we're operating on a very efficient time frame today.
I certainly appreciate efficiency, Mr. Chair.
We're trying to make sure that you have time to do the things you really want to do, Commissioners. So please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Joanna Clyburn. I am the Commissioner of Minnesota Information Technology Services. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on House File 4160. I want to express my strong concern, not because of what's in the bill, but rather what is missing from the bill, and that is the lack of funding for the continued development of an improvement of the MNLAR system. Absent any additional funding for the current biennium, we will not have the dollars available to address many of the bugs and fixes in the new features requested. Those features that the deputy registrars and other stakeholders are calling for in the MNLAR system. We estimate that of the 32 high-priority items that have been identified and prioritized by stakeholders, we will only be able to implement 5 to 8 of them using the resources that we currently have. This means that there will be no deputy register usability design improvements and no MNLAR systems performance improvements. With only the funds currently available, we would need to ramp down the MNLAR's contractor team shortly after into the fiscal year 2019. This ramp down would enable current funds to support a skeleton crew. That could support the current system for the remainder biennium. However, these existing funds would not permit new systems development capabilities. We would operate on a lights-on mode only, with staff focusing on the ongoing maintenance and support work that is necessary to ensure overnight jobs are run, and the system is up and available each day. But you've heard time and time again the frustrations of deputy registrars and other MNLAR system users. We are currently working as hard as possible to make the system improvements and enhancements that will reduce stakeholder frustration. But the reality of our current situation dictates that the ramp up that we are currently under right now will have to be turned back if no additional funding is provided. This is the only responsible option at this point to ensure the system remains available and functional until a full future legislature can take the action needed to support additional systems development improvement. It's the only option I would have. Thank you for the opportunity to testify and express my concerns. I am happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Commissioner. Do you have a few minutes to spend with us this afternoon?
I am at your pleasure, Mr.
Well, since you're the last testifier and we're ahead of schedule, I would entertain. I have a couple questions, and maybe other members have some questions too for you. You certainly have pointed out the absence of funding in this current bill for your department. I just, if you could give us a bit of an update on progress you've made to date, that would be great. I realize this is kind of spur of the moment, so we're not expecting a detailed report, but if you kind of give us an indication of how you think things are going in the department since you've come on board.
So at this point, we have started our ramp up back up. We have gone through establishing the governance committees required, and that means both at the project management team level and at the executive steering committee to ensure that the deputy registers and the auto dealers are part of the functionality and the metrics that are required as part of the May 1 deliverable requirement back to the Oversight Committee for the legislature that explains exactly where we are, what we're doing, and the progress forward, as well as they're working on the surveys with the deputy registers and the Automobile Association as to how do we show the satisfaction of those stakeholders and that they are, in fact, having their concerns met. Additionally, at this point, we are in progress for the 1.11.2 update. It is right now in testing mode. There are a couple of concerns we want to make sure that are taken care of. We're checking to make sure that there's no what I would call cybersecurity pieces to it, the access of unauthorized access. We're making sure that those are good. It's going through its regression testing. In regards to 1.12, that is actually about 75% approximately, I'd have to check the exact number, but I believe it's 75% complete with its full regression testing at this point, and then that will go into load testing as well. With that, we did see a little bit of instability on performance. They were able to take a look at it and be able to couple that back. It had something to do with the server being repeatedly pinged, but they were able to work through that issue. The other piece to this is that we are working through the exact requirements. As you know, the legislation that was passed as part of condition for the $10 million had some very specific, very prescriptive requirements to report back. And when I mapped out all the requirements, I was at 2.5 pages single-spaced, not Joanna, double-spaced. And so we are checking off those boxes to make sure that when we provide that report back to the legislature as required that we're meeting there. It's a lot of work. It's a heavy lift. The teams are stressed. But one of the concerns that we have and that I had expressed in testimony was the narrowing of the funds that became so restrictive that I'm trying to find ways to ensure that I have contractors being overseen by state employees, not contractors overseeing contractors. And because the $10 million specifically said contractor only, I'm having to kind of readjust and try to figure out how I manage that oversight appropriately with the controls and the guardrails that have been provided. And then lastly, we are, as part of this process, also starting to talk about Real ID. And the meetings that we will be having with the leadership talking about the risk assessments, the risk charts, where are they at, where are we in the process. I can report at this time that I do not have any concerns about us basically producing Real ID on time. And I will continue with some of the project management oversight that we've been doing in the past, which includes regular meetings with the stakeholders as well as with the project management team and the chief business technology officer, who right now the interim is Joan Redwing, as you know, who has been the state architect and has been testifying as to the needs and the issues and concerns about the MNLARS system. At this time, I think we're heading in the right direction. I don't think we're out of the woods just yet, but I believe that come May 1st, I believe the committee that oversees the funding will be very pleased.
Thank you, Commissioner. So when the $10 million that was provided in the legislation this year, when does that, do you kind of feel like that runs out?
Mr. Chair, members, that will actually run out at the end of this right before the fiscal year. Mm-hmm. So the end of this year, it'll take us through June, which is why we have to come back to the committee on the 1st to get the additional funding if the 33 were to be provided as part of this. But it would be an exercise of futility for us to be reporting back on May 1st if there's no funding to release by them.
So, Commissioner, let's assume for a moment that additional funding is secured. When do you anticipate you would reach full functionality of the MNLARS motor vehicle system?
Mr. Chair, members, I would need to get the exact date from you.
I don't need an exact date, Commissioner. Just kind of, what's your feeling today? I realize it's got to be a guess because unforeseen things can happen.
Well, and Mr. Chair, members, it's not just the unforeseen. It's remember that we had setbacks when we had to do the layoffs that caused our timeline to shift to the right. And so as a result of that, it's a domino effect, and I can only build up as quickly as I can. I believe that we are looking within the year. So July time frame would be – I'm going to have Mr. Ike and phone a friend here to help me out. But I believe that we're within the year time frame.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. John Eichten, Minute Services Legislative Director. To precisely answer your question, I think we need to define what full functionality means. If full functionality means the functionality that was available in the old system, then the roadmap, if it is fully funded, sees those functionality gaps filled in late summer, early fall of this calendar year. However, we are not simply replacing an old system with a new system that does all the same things the old system does. We're building an entirely new modernized business process. And that means there's going to be new functionality added to aid the deputy registrars in their work and optimize their internal processes at their offices. And the scope of that work, what functionality they need, is going to be set in partnership with them through the governance structure. And so it's a little more complicated than done and not done. It's really a spectrum of maturity. And, you know, I can say as it relates to other systems that we have in state government, the operations and maintenance mode that you go into after development, there's ongoing development for years to come because you're constantly adapting the system and enhancing the system to meet the needs of the users, to meet the needs of the legislature when you change laws or you change fees or policies. Modern software systems are living things. They're not broken or fixed, done, not done. It's really a spectrum.
I'm going to reserve my comments to Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I missed it. I apologize. I missed the first few comments you made. But what I did hear was that, and correct me if I'm wrong, what I did hear was that if this bill is passed without additional funding, that basically we go back to a crawl and we do not make the progress that's made. Did I hear that correctly?
Commissioner Clyburn.
Mr. Chair, members, yes. And I wouldn't say it's even a crawl. I would say it's a treading of water because I can't do a lot more than ramp down and keep the lights on versus continue to make the improvements needed in the system.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. I feel very confident in your leadership. I think that you've taken over under some very, very challenging circumstances. We all know that the mistakes and the problems that preceded you. You have a new team. You're moving forward. And I feel that, unfortunately, the legislature has given a bit of a mixed message. You know, we're critical that that the phone, you know, the call center is slow, and that, but then, you know, we hesitate to give you resources to fix things. So I hope that, I hope we've turned a corner. I feel that you've done a really good job under difficult circumstances, and we want to ensure that that momentum continues. And I'm concerned about what I've heard, Mr. Chair, you know, considering the lack of timely funding to make these corrections. So hopefully we can work through these issues, but I just really wanted to thank you for your leadership.
Thank you. I have no other questions for you this afternoon. Thank you for being with us, and we will continue to converse about the future of this situation. I have a couple more testifiers that are now in the room. First, I have Mark Hughes, I believe, is with us. And finally, we will end with Mr. Carney. Did he come back? There he is. Kaz, you make a great page.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I did the number for me. Thank you very much. Chair Torkelson, members of the committee, you wonder what I've been working on this year. I've been working with Rep. Albright on the Met Council and some Metro Mobility issues. And I can't speak for him, but the thing with the Met Council has been he wants to make sure that elected officials serve on there. And my issue with Metro Mobility is, if you remember historically back in 1976 when Project Mobility was first started, it was under the MTC's administration. And now it's been under the Met Council. And so there's a bill introduced whereby it brings it back, the operation of power back to the MTC. What does this do? Well, with the three or four contractors we've had some union issue, some wage issue, and so on and so forth, whereby if you have the MTC operation, you have those drivers in place, they operate the Gillig 40-foot buses, but they can also rotate and drive Metro Mobility buses. You won't have a driver shortage. They have the same retirement, the same pay scale, so it's a much cleaner operation. You know, the thing that you're going to ask is, what does it cost to bring it back? It will be a little bit of a cost to bring it back, But I find by think by having one the whole operation under one roof, at the end of the day, will save some money and make it a much more efficient operation. I got to be honest. I'm a writer, and I'm certainly not happy with what we have now. And if you want to talk to me offline, I'll expound because we could go on for a while. But I wanted to bring those points up. That's what we've been working on, and we've got it pretty much ready, set to go now. So with that, I'll conclude. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Hughes. And if you want to make an appointment to see me anytime, you just talk to this guy right here.
I will. Thank you.
You bet. And finally today we have, Bob Carney. There he is. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bob, again, Carney, Jr., registered lobbyist for We the People, transit advocate. Sorry I'm late for transit. I wanted to make a couple comments on the omnibus bill, and I'm glad to see that there is some additional funding for the Met Council. And I know there was a huge battle last year, and it looks like the current funding is okay. I know we're heading into a huge gap on the out years that will have to be dealt with next year. I wanted to talk about the plan to extend the rail to St. Cloud, which I think is actually a very good idea. Part of it is it's not working very well right now, kind of disappointing, but if we can get a one-seat ride going in and out for St. Cloud, let me just point out that would make it possible for all students in St. Cloud to come into the University of Minnesota for a full day in and out, and so you can expand all the educational options for those students by consolidating everything that's offered in St. Cloud with everything that's offered in the U of M. In addition, Southwest Light Rail, and Light Rail is still up in the air. There is an appeal going on with that lawsuit. There's all kinds of problems with it, well known. But let me point out that you've already got these trains coming in to downtown, and you could actually extend the same trains going further south and essentially duplicate the route that you've got for rail to address the commuter issues and congesting issues at a fraction of the cost of light rail. Beyond that, you can take a look at getting people out into outstate Minnesota, where there's actually a huge problem with the job market. We have a problem with people in the inner city not getting access to enough jobs, and we have a labor shortage developing in places like St. Cloud and around the state. So I think that we ought to at least give it a shot. The only suggestion I'd make is maybe having an amendment to, in the negotiations, allow us to go back to the status quo if after 3 years it turns out to be a disappointment. But I think it's a great idea to try to extend that to St. Cloud. And I can tell you, as a transit rider, a one-seat ride, not getting on and off and on and off, makes a huge difference. You can do a lot of productive things on those trains with an hour-plus ride. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Carney. Members, that concludes the testifiers that have asked to testify. So we're done with that. I just want to remind you of the schedule. Amendments are due by 4 o'clock this afternoon, and amendments to amendments at 6, is that right? Well, you're supposed to, you have to know.
You're boss.
Oh, well, then it's 6 o'clock. If you have amendments to amendments, we want them by 6 p.m. We do not need to meet this evening, and we will mark up the bill tomorrow. Any questions? Seeing none, this meeting is adjourned.